We've been following the struggles and successes of farmers in our region. A new focus on organic, locally grown food has led to a boom in farm stand and foodie culture. But the hard economic realities of milk production in our region has meant the closures of hundreds of farms over the last decade. That's hit Vermont especially hard. But there's another problem that's not as easy to see from the outside. The people who do the hard work on those farms often aren't able to get food easily. That food insecurity is a problem with many causes, but immigration policy is right at the center. A new book by University of Vermont professor Teresa Mayers dives into this issue. It's called Life on the Other Border, Farm Workers and Food Justice in Vermont. And she's with us now. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
So we've got a pretty good idea in our heads of what Vermont's farming industry is like, but maybe you can tell us a bit more. What does the industry mean for the state's economy, first of all?
Yeah, absolutely. So the dairy industry is really important here. Of all of the states in the nation, Vermont is the state that has the most dependency upon one agricultural commodity, and that commodity is milk. So right now, Vermont's dairies accounts for about 6,000 to 7,000 jobs in the state, provides about $360 million in wages and salaries, and about 80% of the state's farmland is dedicated to dairy production, whether it's for pastures or for growing feed crops or for the dairies themselves. And so dairy is very important for the state of Vermont, both culturally, but also economically, politically, and socially.
It's a huge part of the state. It's a huge part of the identity as well as the economy. What's the workforce for the industry like right now?
Yes, absolutely. So part of it is dependent upon the size of the dairy. One of the things that I look specifically at is the experiences of Latino migrant farm workers in the state, which tend to be working on some of the larger dairies, but not exclusively. And so the labor challenges have been really significant in dairy for a very long time. But beginning in about the late 1990s, what we started seeing in the state was the growing importance of Latino farm workers for maintaining the dairy industry, particularly the large production that we currently see now. Currently, there's an estimate of about 1,000 to 1,200 Latino farm workers in the state, according to University of Vermont Extension. And it's estimated that probably 90% of those are here without documents. One of the key things is that because the dairy industry is year-round work, workers in dairy cannot qualify for some of the other agricultural visa programs like the H-2A visa program. And so within the Latino immigrant farm worker community, the majority of those are undocumented.
What is life like for these folks who live for sometimes years, sometimes for months on end, on a dairy farm in Vermont? Maybe you can paint us a picture, if you would.
I often think about the story of a friend of mine named Juana, and I'm using a pseudonym there, who came to Vermont to join her husband and who eventually did find work on a dairy farm, although wasn't necessarily a full-time worker. And she had two children that were born in the United States, two children that were born in Mexico and remained in Mexico. And her life was definitely difficult. She came from the state of Chiapas. Her family, they are coffee growers, and one of the things that she described to me is that her life back home was a hard one. It was one of poverty. It was one of instability. But she often compared it to her life in Vermont, and she would say, well, I have more money here, but I don't have the freedom here. One of the things that farmworkers experience often is a level of fear and anxiety about leaving the home or leaving the farm, and she certainly had that fear. Her older son, who did come to work here in Vermont shortly after he moved here to work in the dairy industry, was detained while he was out shopping for party supplies. And so that added to some of the difficulties that Juana was experiencing. Eventually, she did return to Chiapas because of some family tragedy and some of family loss. But she, I think the thing that I always remember about her story and about her experiences is she compared the sort of poverty and freedom in Mexico, but relative wealth and lack of freedom here in the United States.
So, of course, there's the fear of going out. You may be worried about police or border protection. But what you're writing about in your book largely is this worry about food security. So before we get into some details, I'm wondering why you picked this topic to focus on with all the other struggles that people have in their lives. Why is food security so central to this story?
I'm a food anthropologist, so I study food and have been doing so within immigrant communities from the time I was a graduate student in Seattle. And I think food, for me, just offers one particularly important way to look at people's connections with their culture, with the environment, with their families, with their religion. You can look at economic issues or political issues or social issues through food. And one of the things that I've long been sort of troubled by is the fact that workers in our food system, whether it's farm workers or whether it's restaurant workers or school cafeteria workers, we often see high rates of food insecurity within food workers in the country, and that includes farmers. There's a higher than average percentage of farmers also that are experiencing food shortages. And so to me, that really indicates that there's something sort of fundamentally wrong in our food system, where those individuals who are ensuring that, you know, those of us who are food secure are food secure, when they're experiencing the food insecurity in their own homes, that to me indicates a big contradiction.
And do you have some hard numbers or at least guesses as to how many of the farm workers who are in that state working documented or undocumented actually are considered food insecure?
Yeah, so part of the research that goes into this book is based both on my administering something called the U.S. Household Food Security Survey Module, which is a USDA tool that is used to understand household food security in the United States, as well as more in-depth qualitative interviews. I'm an anthropologist, and I like to talk to people for a long time, especially about some of these topics. And so the food security surveys that I conducted with 100 farm workers in the state indicated that about 18% of farm worker households are food insecure, and that compares with about 10% for the Vermont average. I think the problem, though, is that those numbers fall short in really capturing the complexity of food access and capturing some of the more lived realities of food security. And so while that number is even though it's elevated compared to the overall Vermont average, I think it's a huge underestimate. And part of it is because that instrument is really indicating that, based on this assumption that if you have access to money, you have access to food. And as I was doing these surveys and I would get through the questions, it's a fairly quick instrument to use, people would say, well, sure, I have the money, but let me tell you about all of the challenges that I get or that I experience going to the store and finding the food that's meaningful to me or finding the time in between the shifts that I'm working on a dairy farm to access some of these foods. And so while, you know, the hard data shows 18%, if we look at some of the qualitative data that I would have from this project, I would estimate that, you know, nearly everyone is facing some kind of food access barrier. And so, again, I think that points to some of the realities that individuals are experiencing here in Vermont, and also some of the sort of really complicated matters that we can think about when we think about food security.
Teresa Mayers is author of a new book called Life on the Other Border, Farm Workers and Food Justice in Vermont. Teresa, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Listen to Next on NPR One, or wherever you get your podcasts.